What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Blindside Blitz. I'm Jimmy P. Of course, alongside of me is Mr. Joe DeCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? Welcome back for another episode of Blindside Blitz, where we get you started. And guess what? You know, we never stop talking about football. We are going to be joined by a very special guest.
And right. I'll tell you right now. Joe, it is our 50th episode.
It is.
With Grumbly's Media.
The big 5-0.
You look pretty good for 50, Joe.
Hey, you know, I keep it with my regimen, my diet, you know, training. I just stay fit. You know, this is what you got
to
do.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're proud to have our 50th show here with Grumbly's Media, and we had to celebrate with our friend, Mr. Brian. No, Brian, what's going on, buddy? South Bend in the house.
Man, I'm glad to be with you guys. You guys are awesome. And congratulations on the 50th episode. I love being here with you guys for this thing. That's cool stuff.
Excellent. All right. So what everybody's talking about, obviously, the Kadore Sanders slide, you know, the snub. Oh, my goodness.
Here we go.
And it's kind of funny, too, is what I think the major reaction is because of how far he went down. You know, 144th overall pick, you know, day three, fifth round. To where, you know, so many people had him. We knew that with the quarterback class this year, it was going to be, you're going to work with these guys. They're not true starters right away. You know, this is definite number one. And you had a work in progress here. But the slide, I think, all the way down to the fifth round and the snub, I think, is what really generated all this. So, Brian, tell me what you think about all this and why you even think this happened.
I think that I thought that Louis Riddick said it really, really well from ESPN, and I'll get to his exact quote because I cannot memorize this for the life of me. I don't know what it is. It's like
I'm
one
terrible
sentence.
At this too.
I need to grab the audio. Yeah, but Louis said, this is not about can you play the position. This is about do we want you to play the position for us. And he said he thought this was a personal type of evaluation. And I agree with them because, listen, Shedeur Sanders is talented enough to be a first-round pick. At worst, talented enough to be a second-round pick. So to slide to the fifth round and 144th overall, this goes way beyond just talent on the field. It was what have you. It was the interview process. It was, I don't know, ownership doesn't like some of the new school stuff. Whether this isn't my personal view, but maybe ownership doesn't like the flashing of the wristwatch and, oh, no, he's rapping. Oh, we can't have a quarterback, dude. I think it was a lot like that. I really don't think this was a football thing. I think this was a beyond football thing, and that's why he slid. I'm not saying he should have. I can't understand these quarterback-needy teams that could have gotten Shedeur in the fourth, in the fifth round. The Colts have Anthony Richardson. He completed less than 48% of his passes, and they're like, "Now we're good." The Jets have Justin Fields as their quarterback, and they're like, "Nah, fourth round, fifth round on a guy that could be a franchise quarterback, could be." It blows my mind that teams didn't take a stab in the dark because quarterbacks are almost always overdrafted, not underdrafted, and this was the complete exception to the norm with Shedeur here.
Yeah, I agree the same thing with you, with the, even the fact that any team here that again, like you said, the Jets, I think, is a perfect one, too, to where they've had, you know, been looking for a quarterback for so long, tried the Aaron Rodgers thing, that didn't work out. You grab Justin Fields because, hey, you didn't really waste a whole lot on that. Let's see what the kid's got. But, again, to where this guy, you could have the same story. Let's see what this kid's got here, and the 100, you know, way down in the fifth round, that's worth it to you. It's not going to kill you right there. Because right now, like you said, you put all your eggs in a basket with Justin Fields working out for you.
Yeah, I mean, for Shedeur, when I was going through some of these quarterbacks and trying to figure out just exactly how I viewed him in my own personal opinion, there are certain attributes that Shedeur definitely needs to get better on, just like any other quarterback, especially in this draft class. Like, there's not one quarterback, Cam Ward included, that is a done set guy that you can just plug and play, and he's going to grow as he moves along. With Shedeur, it was interesting because there's a few different factors in the reason why he fell. There's certain things that he did in college that with holding on to the ball a little bit too long, not just going processing fast enough, and other things of that nature. The problem with Shador, too, is the way he, you know, represented himself to certain teams. Now, that's not saying, oh, well, it's because of the flashy jewelry. It's because of the confidence that exuded from him. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Like, I don't think that's any part of the equation. I think it was more about some of the things that were said. The interview process in its entirety was a critical reason why a lot of teams started to turn sour on Shador. And the interview process alone shouldn't be the reason, but it's just things that followed afterwards. So you go into an interview process, what we heard is that there were several, and I mean several teams that he went to interview because everybody was interested in him at first. And he went into these interviews and basically just seemed careless, seemed like he just didn't care to hear from them or talk about or answer any questions. And it rubbed a lot of teams the wrong way. And word gets around the NFL fast. Even guys that weren't even looking at quarterback that might have taken him, they were hearing the same things. And it kind of snowballed into this factor behind the scenes, mind you. The scouts, the front office. There's even some owners that blatantly said, I don't want him. I don't like how he presented himself in the interview. I don't like how, you know, he talked to us. So I feel like for Shador, his guidance from his father, from Deion Sanders, it wasn't all the best guidance and advice, because he even made a comment about how, well, we might pull an Eli Manning, you know, in this coming draft. You know, if we don't like the fit or what, he made a comment. Even if it was a joke, teams looked at him like, I don't want to take that risk now. Like, is he serious? Is he joking? Like, so there was a lot of different variables for Shador, whether it be, you know, his pro day, whether it be, like, just game tape watching him. And there was another thing, too, that kind of pulled up a red flag, is he was 1-8 against teams that were competitive, teams that were any good on defense in his conference. So I don't think it was just pure talent. Like, there's no doubt about it. The kid has talent. He definitely does. There was a reason why there was hype. There was a reason why there was a large following of him. But this goes to show that, like, there's other variables involved that could critically crush your draft status if you don't play the hand right. So
right.
That's how I kind of viewed it and saw, like, the reason why he fell so far. And Cleveland got to the point where they're like, yeah, we drafted Dillon Gabriel in the third round. The value is tremendous. We got to just take him now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you compare the Shador situation to, okay, we're guys, you know, thinking your dating days and all that, like, you might meet a girl and she's got some red flags. Okay, so Shador mm-hmm. has some red flags, okay? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. this girl that you meet, man, she cheated on two of her exes. That's not good. You know, she's very needy. Oh, that's not good. She's a little selfish. That's not good. I'm just throwing out random. This isn't a
right. Yeah.
There are red flags. But all of a sudden, you come to find out she's a Brazilian underwear model. And you're just like, I'm in. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm in. Like, and so the point is, I can understand where there are some concerns, legitimate concerns, about, hey, what have you. He holds on to the ball a little bit too long, right? Like, he's not a great athlete, whatever. Off the field, like, interviews, like, where's his head at maturity-wise? All those sorts of things. He doesn't have extraordinary talent, like the equivalent of the Brazilian underwear model, mm-hmm. where you're just like, I don't even care. I'm in. Yet, so what? He's whatever, a little selfish, a little this, a little that, not to our liking, whatever teams are doing with their evaluation process.
Right.
I can concede that the talent, although it's there, he is talented, it's not to this huge degree where you're like, we don't even care. like it gets to the third, the fourth, the fifth round, and teams are still like, yeah, no, we'll stick with Mason Rudolph and hope Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is where were the reports of this possibly happening? Like, it was nowhere to be found. And I'm not blaming the media, but it's just funny. Keep this in mind for the next draft that comes along. When you hear a media person, and they seem like they're tapped in, right? They seem like they've got that information. This was nowhere to be found. He slides to 144th overall, and we didn't get even a peep of, hey, guys, he might not only fall out of the first and the second, he might be a day three pick. That wasn't on anybody's radar. So that part of it's pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is day three. When you, normally, when you get drafted in day three, especially round five, you're being viewed as a backup or a developmental prospect with an opportunity where maybe could be a starter someday, you know, or just a solid role player. So it's a very dangerous slope now that Shador got drafted that this low in day three and round five, and with the quarterback situation that now kind of comes along with it. We talked about Dylan Gabriel being drafted in the third round. Dylan Gabriel, as far as I'm concerned, is being viewed as a potential starter being drafted that high. And now you also couple that with the fact that they traded for Kenny Pickett. Bring him in. They signed Joe Flacco. They have him in there. You got four quarterbacks now that from between now and at the end of training camp, you got to figure out who's your three going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's wild, isn't it? You got five quarterbacks on your roster. I don't know what they it blows my mind they drafted Dylan Gabriel in the in the third round. But over Shador, I don't understand that at all. This dude cannot throw over the middle of the field. He's such a short quarterback. He is not a good NFL prospect in any way, shape, or form. I hate to dog the guy, but that's just the reality here. To be a third-round pick is insane. And now they they pretty much just threw a third-rounder away. Like, it's like opening your wallet and finding a $100 bill, and you're like, I don't need this. Crumple it up, throw it. It's like you blow your nose on it, and you're not wealthy. What are you doing? What are you doing? I cannot understand the Browns at all. So they pick up Joe Flacco. They pick up Kenny Pickett. They draft two quarterbacks. They still have Deshaun. They got to get rid of two of these five. They have, like, I just don't understand what their whole process was. It was just ridiculous from the get-go.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, for Deshaun, the writing's already on the wall. He restructured his contract. Pretty much everyone already knows, like, after this year, now they can get out of that contract, get out from underneath it. So that's going to be the plan for him. Unfortunately, it might mean that he has to stay on the roster for this year. And with Flacco, he's a one-and-done quarterback. He's an insurance policy. So there's no guarantee that Flacco stays even.
Right.
Like
right.
After pulling off the trade for Kenny Pickett, everyone's like, okay, they got Flacco, they got Kenny Pickett. All right. Now that frees them up a little bit for the draft. But then they come into the draft and they draft not one but two other quarterbacks that are both developmental. You view them how you view them, but in the very end, now you've got some tough decisions to make. You're going to play musical chairs until we get to the end of the training camp, and now you've got some real tough decisions. Is it going to be? And what I expect is you're not going to invest those draft picks on these two rookies and cut one of them. You're going to keep both of those guys. So it comes down to Flacco and Kenny Pickett. Do those guys even make the team? You know, does Kenny Pickett outplay Flacco or vice versa? And that's going to be the deciding factor.
Who are your three? I guess that's the thing, right? You started to answer that. But the five, who do you think the three are going to be that make the team?
So Watson, to me, it's going to be basically a redshirt year. Like, I don't think he's going to play. I think they're going to just swallow the tough pill that it is, pay the guy to be on the roster, because he's not going to be ready even beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy's still working his way back from injury, so he's not going to be ready. So he's
they can put him. They can just stash him on IR, right?
Yeah. And that might be the answer, whether it be short term or just, you know what, forget it. We're just going to put him on IR for the full year. That's probably the most logical way to go about with Deshaun. And then you've got the two rookies that you want to work with. And I think it's going to be a battle between Flacco and Kenny Pickett to basically start. So, and that's what it's going to end up shaking out to be. You're going to keep your rookies because you want to develop them. Maybe you get surprised in training camp. You know, the crazy things happen in the NFL. So, but I think it's going to be a battle really between Flacco and Kenny Pickett and who gets the best snaps, who performs better. That to me is how it shakes out.
Yeah.
We've got a couple comments in here. We've got Cody Johnson in the house with us tonight. What's
going on, Cody?
Odie, there you go. He goes, I got to assume that they think they can trade one of these guys to a team that dropped the ball, maybe. Perhaps, but, I mean,
I don't see it.
The thing is, Cleveland dropped the ball in this thing. You know what I mean?
And you don't say.
I mean, and this is the thing. Not only they had a plan, it seemed like. You get Joe Flacco. You trade for Kenny Pickett early.
Yeah.
They had a game plan.
Yeah.
You know, scouts, the GMs, they're planning for this draft the whole time through until the day of, even the afternoon before, they're making trades. Here you go. Bang, bang, bang. Oh, they're on the move, you know? And then they're on the clock, too. They trade out. Holy shit, you know, and here we go. Here comes Jacksonville Jaguars here, and they're making some moves. They got a plan, and they draft two running backs and two quarterbacks, and you needed more holes to fill. And now you've loaded your quarterback room so damn full that you either got to cut Kenny Pickett or something like that and waste that pick, or, again, Joe Flacco that you brought in, which you might be able to cut, but I think he's probably going to be your bridge starter, and you've got two quarterbacks that you just drafted to where now you already – if you cut Gabriel, then all of a sudden that's crazy because you just wasted a third round
pick. They're not cut. They're not
so
cut.
Then you're talking about cutting Shador possibly. So it's a whole big debacle I think that we're going to see play out through this offseason. And it is the pile of dung that is the Cleveland Browns and why they get dogged all the time. Right? It's right, Brian?
It's right on the money. Yeah, it is. And – I'm skimming through my notes. There was something I found about Andrew Berry, the GM over there, and it was a lot of swings and misses in the draft, like an alarming rate. And I'm not saying that these analytics guys cannot do anything correct, because that's not true. But maybe Andrew Berry, who's analytics-based, just him specifically, hadn't been working out very well. Right? There have been an alarming rate of swings and misses. And this takes the cake. I mean, what's going on with the quarterback position and everything both of you laid out? You have all of these other areas to address. And now you might possibly cut one of your rookies. Like you get Shador in the fifth round and they didn't even sound happy about it. Andrew Berry was just like, yeah, I wouldn't call it. I'm paraphrasing. He seemed like he's like, yeah, we kind of were forced to do it. Like Jimmy Haslam.
You know what? You know what, Brian? That kind of – when that actually happened, it almost seemed like the owner stepped in and said, no, I want to take him. And they were probably unhappy about, like, no, we didn't want to take him. But, no, I want to take him. So take him. And they were like, okay, fine. Jesus. All right. Well, I guess we're doing this.
I thought the same thing. I don't know that it happened like that, right, but it sure felt like it. It sure felt like they're like, we wouldn't call this a great acquisition. I mean, it's okay, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It just sounded like Jimmy ordered the code red, and they were like, oh, man, I guess. Oh, man, that's crazy.
And that's a crazy thing, too, is like we talk about other needs. Me and Jimmy, before we even got to the draft here, we were talking about the Browns and saying, like, you know what? It'd be great if they could add another wide receiver. Like, that's something that they really, really could use. Cedric Tillman's on there. You got Kamari Thrash penciled in as your starter. You know, Jerry Jeudy's pretty much the only, like, guy that you can really rely on at this point, but you got nothing else. So we kind of expected that to be one of the targets, and they just never addressed it.
So, you know what's funny? I didn't even think about this. where if you're Joe Flacco, if you're Kenny Pickett, you're thinking, all right, I got a legitimate chance to start. And mm-hmm. and instead of just drafting one quarterback, which is not the most shocking thing ever, they draft two guys. And now you go from, hey, I got a chance to start to, am I going to make the freaking roster right now?
Like, yeah.
It's pretty wild that I didn't even think of it from Flacco and Pickett's point of view. And listen, that's life in the NFL. But that's right. a major curveball that neither one of us could have seen coming.
100%.
Oh, absolutely. And Mike Tackett's got a great point here. You go Flacco, Pickett, Gabriel, and then Watson's on IR and Sanders on the practice squad. So that's potential there, too. Shout out to Mike Tackett. He's one of our know-it-alls out there. That's what we call, Brian, by the way. That's what we call our followers of our other show, Football on the No Show, which you've known, too. But he's a loyal fan here. He checks in and checks out with us all the time. Awesome. He's got another thing here. Let's see what he's got. He always brings the noise here. I love it. He goes, can we get over this false narrative that race played a factor into Shador's fall? He was a 13-12 starter with zero conference championships who has more hype than talent, worried more about his rap career. So there you go. There were teams across the league that had concerns about the circus he'd bring to on a weekly basis, taking away from the team goals. Having his dad as his agent, threatening to pull an Eli Manning, there you go, the right fit, and screams me, not team, and it was the worst choice he could have made. And he's got a bunch that I can't even fit on this damn thing. I mean, he makes a good point again, and I think, like what Brian even said, the race thing is just kind of, you can't play all that. It's overplayed, and you're kind of, for me, that's a lazy argument, because you've seen it happen so many different times to where, obviously, people of color have gotten picked, first and things like that. Somebody else.
Cam Ward went first.
It's not like all of a sudden we became racist and stuff like that.
What do we do?
I think when the NFL and owners want to send a message, they work together to send a message. And this was a message that they wanted to send that, listen, if you come in here with this attitude and all this other stuff, and it's one thing if you've got a lot of talent and maybe there's teams that would deal with it, but all these guys were just saying, we're not letting this clown show come in here and try and do this. You know what I mean? The last thing that kind of reminds me of this was maybe with Johnny Manziel getting drafted. Because of what kind of went around with him with Johnny Football and then doing this, and he's got money and he's blah, blah, blah. And he kind of fell a little bit in the draft, too. He's getting worried. Not nowhere near as what happened with Shador, but that's what everybody's worried about. You know, but he was looked upon to have a little more talent than what Shador does. And as far as Deion Sanders, he didn't help. We talked about this before, to where a lot of these, you coach, teams, stuff like that. I have my kids in sports too. You got the dad coaches that are out there and this and this and blah, blah, blah. Or even parents supporting their kids and they're the best damn thing, blah, blah, blah. Nobody likes that. And that's what Deion is on a huge, grander scale. And it didn't help that he was their agent. And they kind of realized this so much that, wow, this was like a shot to their face. To where they had to fire their own dad. You know, I mean, sorry, Dad. You know, you're not our agent anymore. See you later. We love you and all, so I'll see you at dinner, though, right? So I think it's crazy. And that's partially, I think, why it all happened that way.
Well, I think a couple of things where, the race thing, the first part of this, I really don't think that's what's going on here. And you said it. Jimmy, where you're like, or Joe, you said, like, Cam Ward went number one. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's the same draft where it's hard to play the race card if there's a black quarterback that has taken number one overall. And think about some of the other black QBs in the league that have been taken high, that are highly thought of. Jaden Daniels was taken number two overall. Caleb Williams, number one pick, right? Like, so
Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud.
This is not a race thing. This is – quarterbacks are viewed differently than other positions in football, especially in the NFL. It just is. The way you carry yourself, the way you act, the way you behave, the way you dot your I's, cross your T's, everything is under the microscope. That's just what it is. And so that's what teams did. They put Shador right under the microscope. And for whatever reason, their evaluation led them to believe this is not our guy. That's what's going on here. I don't know how bad these interviews were. I have no idea. It must have been pretty bad. But for some teams to have this amount of a problem with the guy, I don't understand the nerves that he's touched with NFL teams and a lot of fans, I don't get triggered by Shadur at all. If he's flashing the watch and dancing a little bit, he's got charisma. I don't care at all. I think a lot of it is fine and fun.
Yeah.
I'm in the minority. A lot of people get triggered. But I also think this is one thing that's important to me is I've said this about Colorado for a long time. Is it's the old Dan Lanning quote. Remember the Oregon head coach? They're about to play Colorado, and he says, you know, they care about clicks. We care about wins. Right. Something like that. They care about it. We care about something like that.
Yeah, but no, you're right.
I think it's the misperception of Colorado and Deion Sanders and Shadur Sanders and Travis Hunter and all. They only care about clicks. They just care about their IG views and likes. They don't care about winning. And I've never bought into that. Deion Sanders is one of the most competitive athletes you've ever seen before.
Right.
And he's a competitive coach as well. I think he should hit the recruiting trails and go to in. But he's competitive. I just think there's this misconception of I don't care about winning. I just care about clicks and views. And that's just not true. Why can't it be both? Why can't you have a little bit of style and yet still care about winning? But somehow that's like two separate categories for a lot of people. And if you care about clicks, well, then you don't care about winning whatsoever. I've never bought into that, but it's out there, and maybe some NFL front offices bought into that too. I don't know.
I think it's more like fan bases driven, like as far as that goes. Because there's some of those traditionalists that are like, well, I don't want my quarterback dancing around, flashing his watch. And so I tend to think that I would give more credit to the NFL team saying, like, I think they overlook those type of things. It's not as of a shallow outlook from their perspective. It's probably more about, like, the attention he gets, and then you have the fan bases that are just reacting to it like crazy, pro, you know, either pro him or not, you know. So, but, yeah, you got a point for sure.
Yeah
I'm just thinking a little bit. Think about Lamar. Right? Like, Lamar's got some style. Lamar's got some flash. Like, Lamar will dance a little bit, and no one's hung up on that at all. Now, he's a two-time MVP, and he's put up huge numbers in the NFL, and that has a lot to do with it. But I don't hear anybody hung up on that whatsoever, and yet it's the biggest deal ever with Shadur Sanders. I'm just like, okay, I guess.
It's the first time I've ever seen something like this happen, where the hype is way up, and where he got taken is day three. So, we've seen Lamar Jackson, like you just brought up, is the fact that he flipped because there was a lot of questions about him. Everybody loved his mobility, but they're like, man, I don't know. Can he really throw the ball at the next level? Can he get the spots? Blah, blah, blah. So there's questions on him, but he slid, but not.
No way.
Not out of the first round.
No,
he went 112 picks higher than Jim. Right? Like, wow.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is monumental. Like, this is a notch in history that everybody will remember this time.
In the end, we're going to see just how right those NFL teams were in 2 to 3 years, or were they just all flat out wrong, and then Cleveland ended up getting the steal of the draft.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see.
And hey, it cost Shadur a ton of money, but it does give him some motivation. This kid, if he somehow turns out to be a good NFL quarterback, which again, he's capable of, it's possible. Mm-hmm. This is part of his brand. You know, I slid to the fifth round, kind of like Brady with 199th. We all know 144th. You know, like this can be part of his brand. So it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes from here. But man, this is like the anti-Tebow thing. Remember the people that just rode hard for Tebow when he was drafted?
Yeah.
And man, it is the opposite with Shadur. There are some absolute haters. It's like, I get it. There are some things you can be critical of that you might not like, but maybe it's like the anti-Tebow thing, right? The people that rode hard, man, they rode for Tebow. And the people that are like, he can't throw the ball. It just turned into this back and forth thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I see that with Shadur. For the people that are triggered and hate, everything about the guy, the people that back him, they really back him. And they're just going back and forth, and it's just going higher and higher and higher. I'll tell you what, man, one of the winners is the NFL. This is not bad for the NFL whatsoever.
Exactly.
Yeah, they broke a record in day three because everybody was following this whole Shador thing. And they're like, when is he going? When is he going? In terms of views, they broke a record. First time in NFL history that they had so many. I forgot what the exact number was.
Probably watched it was in a couple of days.
It was day three.
Yeah.
Because nobody knew where he was going to go, and everybody watched
it.
At least he
knew
the fifth round pick. But pretty incredible, and we'll see where it all ends up for sure.
Yeah, and I think one thing that NFL learned after this thing too is, well, the fact that they released in an email his phone number just because he's, you know, quote unquote, representing himself or at least his father, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So when they sent the email across the whole the league in his number, which created a whole prank phone call thing on top of this all too, which started a whole other thing too, it kind of exploded this whole thing on top of it and made it even more elevated. The fact that people were posting them, like, here you go, there's a video of him getting a prank call and making it even bigger. And now the NFL had did this, so hopefully they learned from this mistake and what they did too, which kind of, I think, elevated into some of this too and some of the hype and the backlash that he's getting here and there. But,
that's such a dirty thing to do.
Oh, big time.
It's so bad.
I mean,
all
these guys are attached to the phone. They can't wait for it to ring. They're waiting. All of a sudden somebody, oh, I'm getting a call. Everybody quiet. And then...
Yeah. I know, dude. That's just such an a-hole move right there. Anyway, it's a young kid who's only thinking, it's going to be funny. You're not thinking of the other side, but the other side of it, like you guys just laid out, is, hey, everybody quiet. This is the moment. For years to get to this spot. They're calling me. I'm about to get drafted, and it's a prank. I guess Tyler Warren got pranked as well.
Yeah, he did too. So all I have to say is I guess the kid was more about clicks, you know what I mean, than performance.
Right. Yeah, more about clicks than performance. Nice, I like it. So, all right, so let's move on from this. Now the Titans. Let's talk about Cam Ward here now to the Titans here. He gets drafted number one overall.
That was.
I know, bro. Those damn Titans, right? You know, Nashville, Tennessee. But now, you know, 1 year, Brian Callahan with the Titans had Will Levis. Will Levis led the league in turnovers. I think he had like 12 interceptions and like 6 fumbles or something like that last year. Not the greatest kind of impression you want to put on your new head coach. So now they go and draft Cam Ward here, but you've got Will Levis still. So he says that Cam Ward isn't exactly the starter. They're going to fight it out, which we always hear too. Competition builds everything in here. But what do you expect the game plan could be here for the Titans at the QB? Do you think they roll with Levis here again, or if whoever wins, or do you think they, like I said, take their time, go to Cam Ward later on if they have to, or you think this kid could start away right away?
That's a tough call because I'll get to my doubts about Cam Ward in a second, but if the competition is Will Levis, I could see Cam Ward starting right away, Will Levis has got some tools, but he has not put it together, man. So I could see Cam Ward starting week one. That wouldn't shock me at all, but I think the Titans blew it. I'll be honest with you guys. Like if I'm running that organization, I understand that you have to find a quarterback, but just because you have to find a quarterback doesn't mean that Cam Ward is going to be a franchise quarterback. I would not have bypassed Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter for a prospect like Cam Ward. I wouldn't have done it. I think they absolutely blew it. And listen, I don't know why we're acting like this is the last shot the Tennessee Titans have of finding a franchise quarterback. Right? Like there are good rounds. There's next year's draft where there are much better prospects. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still might stink again, right? Like, why are we acting like this is your last, this is your only chance? It's just not the truth. And Cam Ward, although he's a playmaker, the decision-making at times, you're just like, bro, what are you doing? Like, Cam Ward will do something sensational. Yes. And then he'll do something where you're like, dude, an eighth grader wouldn't have made that decision. What are you doing right now?
So he throws it across the field. Like, he rushes out all the way, you know, gets out of the pocket, breaks the pocket to the right side, all the way towards the sideline, and then throws it directly across the field, the opposite way. Makes sense. You know?
Yes. And you're like, Cam, buddy, dude, like, what are we doing right now? So that's my thing is, it reminds me of, you know, like college basketball, where you might be on the bubble and it's like, hey, this team, they've got to win. So I'm going to bet on them. And it's like, just because they need to win doesn't mean they're going to win. And I look at that with quarterbacks. Just because you need a quarterback doesn't mean you can just throw a dart and select a guy and he's going to be a franchise guy. Like, I just think I think Cam Ward isn't going to be a disaster. I think he's just going to be a guy. I don't see top five. I don't see top 10. I don't see special in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I'll happily eat my words if I'm wrong. Just don't evaluate him along those lines. And to bypass Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter, blue chip prospect for Cam Ward, who some had him as the seventh prospect in last year's draft if he came out then, right? Like, not taking him number one overall.
Right, and there was also, you know, even people that were evaluating the talent overall had him eighth in this year's draft, like overall. So if you're picking first overall, the whole idea of picking that high in the draft is get yourself a can't-miss, and, you know, obviously you're not always going to nail it, but do your homework and everything and get your – best case scenario, get the blue chip player that's in the draft that is damn near can't miss, like Abdul Carter, you know, and some people still are a little bit skeptical, a little bit about Travis Hunter, you know, size wise and whatever, what he can do, what, you know, can he actually do full time? So, but man, I thought you get one of those players and you can't, you're putting the stepping stones in place.
Yeah.
Right. You're building the foundation because let's face it, this team is not a quarterback away from saying, "Hey, we're going to be in the playoff race." Like, no, you guys got a lot more to do. So get the best players available. Go BPA, and that's Abdul. Like, in my opinion, it was Abdul Carr all day long. He was my first player overall. Like, that dude was going to turn your defense around, or at least help turn it around. Go and get yourself a guy like that and then work on the rest of the draft. You could have still took a quarterback later. If you really love somebody, we talk about Shador sliding. Shador slid. Like, you could have had Abdul Carter, and then you could have just took Shador much later. Like, I know hindsight's 20/20, but come on. Like, I agree with you, Brian. Like, I think Tennessee kind of missed out in this draft, having all those high picks.
Hey, and one of these things is, ideally, you'd love to have a great supporting cast and then draft your quarterback, but way more times than not, you're picking at the top because you don't have a great supporting cast. The Patriots come to mind. That's a good example, right, compared to the Titans this year. The Patriots last year, they took Drake May third overall, and he had a promising rookie season. And just 1 year later, they did a lot of stuff. Like, they drafted some playmakers in this year's draft. They made a lot of free agent acquisitions. Like, that roster is a whole lot better in 1 year, right? So it can change pretty quickly. The difference, though, is when the Patriots selected Drake May, Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter weren't on the board. You know what I mean? The equivalents of those players were not on the board when they made those selections. So I think that changes things quite a bit. And I also think you go back to the Titans, the 2011 draft comes to mind. They draft Jake Locker while J.J. Watt is still on the board. And that's why I love this, because you can make great arguments on both sides. I'd say you're better off having J.J. Watt, as it turned out. I didn't have a crystal ball at the time, but the way it turned out, obviously you're better off with J.J. Watt. You can still tell me, even if you have J.J. Watt, unless you have a quarterback, you're still probably not going anywhere. And I still go back to, well, then you wait for a better spot. You know, like, that's the whole thing is if you have Cam Ward and he's just a guy, your franchise still isn't going anywhere. So I would take who I think is a sure bet in Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter before I selected Cam Ward. But hey, they got phone calls and they were like, click, not interested. Yeah. They can about the polar opposite.
Yeah.
The way teams fell in love with Cam Ward and fell completely out of love with Shedeur Sanders, it still blew my mind always.
Yeah, think about that. They could have really, you know, cashed in terms of compensation if they were trading down even like a few picks. They still could have cashed. Look at what Chicago did to Carolina. Like,
absolutely.
Unbelievable. They could have possibly made something like that.
What happened with the Travis Hunter trade just from 5 to 2. That's a healthy price.
Exactly. Like, you know.
All right, we've got a few comments in here. We've got Hody's with us again. He goes, it feels like just yesterday that the Titans almost made a Super Bowl with a complete team minus a QB. Now they're a rough team praying for a QB that solves everything. They looked like they were starting to compete. Well, again, Vrabel days, you know, but one, it shows you, even, you know, a difference, I think, that he kind of put in that team. But then you've lost some talent since then, though, too. And then we have lack of quarterback. I mean, Tannehill did a lot for them, you know what I mean? Tannehill was the guy, and that helped get them to that. Whatever you want to say about him, he was, you know, that true starter, what they needed to not make the mistakes and turnovers, and Derrick Henry. Are you kidding me? And that's another, like when we talked about running backs and Ashton Dempsey in this draft, a difference maker that can, like, change your offense and you can revolve your offense around him that will change your dynamic of your team and even help your team altogether, too, and be that's your persona. We've seen Derrick Henry do something like that. You just knew when you went to play Tennessee, you had to try and stop Derrick Henry. It wasn't going to happen. But you know that's what you had to try and do, you know, and that's what they did, and that's where the success is. The Baltimore Ravens, same thing. You know, you got to stop Lamar, their run game. That's what they do. They can win still running the ball and do that. And I think that's some of the things you kind of look at. That's what Tennessee did. But since then, they haven't had that identity. They tried Tony Pollard and all this other stuff, and they haven't really had a great wide receiver. Last year, they had Calvin Ridley for a year, who did okay. But, you know, still 1,000 yards, you know, receiving. But
how's that Traylon
Burks? But Traylon Burks, you know, big swing and miss on that one, too. I want to talk about whipping on a lot of draft picks. Tennessee Titans are good for that, too.
It's, you know, it's wild, and this isn't breaking news, but it's amazing what a legit quarterback can do to compensate for roster deficiencies. Think about Washington. They were a 4-13 team. Yeah. And they picked up Jaden Daniels. We would have said the exact same things about Washington heading into last year's draft. It's like, dude, it is bare bones with talent on this team. Like, where are the difference makers? And then they get Jaden Daniels, and all of a sudden you're looking at them, and you're like, you know, I think taking them plus the points is a great play in the NFC title game against the Eagles. It's like, holy cow. Think how quickly that changed. So I just think of the Titans, and yes, any of you checked in, like, the Titans were a one seed, you know? I believe it was that year when Tannehill threw three picks against the Bengals, and they probably were one and done. But, you know, they were a legit team, probably won around 13 games that year. And he was just okay. They had a lot more talent on that roster. But the point is, the Titans look like they are bare bones. But if they have an actual quarterback, all of a sudden you're like, wow, Jeffrey Simmons is unbelievable. You know, they've got a couple of pieces here and there. I'll put it this way. If you had a Jaden Daniels type season from Cam Ward, the supporting cast looks a whole lot better than it does right now on paper. That's just the way it goes.
100%.
Absolutely. All right. We're talking to Brian Noe, Fox Sports Radio. You can check him on the weekends, Fox Sports Radio Countdown. He is a big Miami Dolphins fan. We can't do this without talking some Dolphins football here. All right, so your Finch, how do you think they did on the draft here?
Well, they addressed positions of need. We'll see if these players are any good, you know, but they needed big dudes. You got to get better in the trenches. Like, the Dolphins are just too pretty of a football team. They work with precision, right? Speed. They work with timing. Speed, right? They're a very pretty. They're like a track team. They're pretty. They can play a finesse style of football, and sometimes that'll win you games. But you got to be able to line up and knock people around, and they don't have the ability to do that. So their offensive line was weaker, and they lost to Ron Armstead due to retirement. Their defensive line is bare bones, you know, and they addressed that in the draft. So hopefully their picks in the first three rounds the guys in the trenches, they'll pay dividends, because if you are lacking in the trenches where everything begins, I don't care how pretty of a football team you have. I don't care how good your skill position players are. If you're consistently getting dominated in the trenches, and that's just where the Dolphins are. So they had to address the trenches. Hopefully they found some guys that'll help them.
Well, I have to agree. The first two picks, in my opinion, are going to be studs for the Dolphins. Guard Big Jonah Thevenaida from Arizona. I absolutely loved him coming out into this draft. I'm like, dude, whoever gets this guy, it's a plug-and-play guard. Like, he's going to lock it up for you. So that pick, and then D-tackle Kenneth Grant, he was soaring up draft boards as we started to get to, like, Thursday night. But what a monster on the inside, a guy who's – you're not going to run on him, and then he also has the potential to give you some pass rush ability too, even though the guy's a monster, big dude, so from Michigan. So I love those two picks. After that, it sucks that they didn't have round three or round four pick. It ended up going right into round five, but they did their due diligence on those depth-type players, and who knows? You never know what happens in the draft, man. You might find yourself a diamond in the rough, you know, with one of those picks. And a lot of times that's how your roster continues to get built, is those middle to late rounds.
You know what it blows my mind is, as we sit here right now, the Patriots roster might be better than the Dolphins roster. And think about how far ahead the Dolphins were in talent last year. Mm-hmm. And now in one year, it might have flipped where at least the Patriots have caught up. At the very least, it's like the Dolphins were trying to hunt down the Bills, and now it's gone from trying to hunt down the Bills to, like, are the Patriots more talented than the Dolphins right now? Like, legitimately, it took 1 year to turn things around to that degree. That's life in the NFL sometimes, man. It's crazy.
Right, and it's funny that you bring up that point, man, because, again, we're going to bring that up because we want to get your point of view on this one, because, again, like you said, they're a real fast team. Didn't have the defense that showed even in the playoffs there, too, especially when they had injuries that year, wherever you're in the playoffs, but getting destroyed, getting beat in bad weather. And now you were that expected team that was going to challenge the Bills. Who's going to challenge the Bills? Here they are. Mike McDaniel's here, and, you know, the Dolphins. But now Tyreek Hill's like, I don't know, man, the door's open, peace. And then you've got Jalen Ramsey's on the trading block. Ooh, somebody wants in, you know? So, and Tua, oh my goodness, Tua again getting injured last year, again with the concussion again. A lot of people asking him, man, please just retire or do something. Where do you see the direction of this team going even?
Yeah, that's tough. And it's a good point because, you know what, honestly, it could go either way. If you think about it, where Tua was on the shelf for, gosh, what did it end up being, five-ish games right around there? That's a long time to miss your starting quarterback. There's a big step down from Tua to QB2. And so it just feels like glass half empty with the Dolphins, right, for everything that we've talked about. They're not great in the trenches. They're a little too pretty. They can't knock you around, play smash mouth, all that type of stuff. But we forget QB1 was on the shelf for a little while. And what if QB1 is healthy all 17? You know, all of a sudden you can have a bit of a surprise year. I wouldn't be surprised either way, because Tua has had a year where he's played all 17, and he's had years where he hasn't come close to playing all 17. And so our fear is that's going to happen again. And if it does, you have a team with some holes already on it. So it feels like the arrow is pointed down. But maybe if Tua has good health, they could have a bit of a surprise year. Not a shock year, that like deep playoff run and like, whoa, they're challenging for the Super Bowl. No, not that. And I also think this is sort of the reality of paying a good quarterback huge money. I think Tua is good. I don't think he's special. And it's comparable to Purdy with the Niners. He's good. I don't think he's special. And when you have to pay him special money, and he's not going to reach that level of production. Look at the Dolphins roster. They've had to skimp. All of a sudden, they're not like, hey, we'll take this guy. We'll take that guy. Hey, we'll grab. Yeah, why the hell was it? Tua's on a rookie deal. It's a different world now. And that's a reality check for both the Dolphins and 49ers.
Don't worry, Brian, because the guy right behind Tua this year is Zach Wilson. Don't worry. He'll let you down. We'll let you down.
We're in great hands with Zach Wilson.
That's right. Things are right. Positivity, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. And then William Delphin Lauer is in the house last night, too. That's the owner of Grumblings Media, so it's great to have him on here aboard with us. He has Tua taken this team as far as he can go, especially with his injury history. Do you think Mike McDaniels can rejuvenate Zach Wilson?
I don't think God can rejuvenate him. So no, I would say no on that. But the hope is, listen, if Tua's healthy all year,
cannot be rejuvenated.
Is it possible that they have a regular season where they have home field advantage and they're not going to the Chiefs and below freezing, but like below zero weather, whatever it was there, mm-hmm. and they make a deeper playoff run? Sure, it's possible. Yeah. So I would say no, legitimately. It's not just a Dolphins fan. I think legitimately they could go farther than they have, but not much further, right? Like not much further, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, when the Dolphins look at Tua and everything, they know what they have in Tua. They know what they're capable of with the offense and everything. They have seemed, at least so far, pretty comfortable with him staying the starter, and they really do believe in him. The only way you move on from Tua is if you have a backup plan, if you have another answer. So whether that be this upcoming draft, when Miami might look into, like, hey, it's a better quarterback class, maybe we go grab one of these guys that we really like, and whether Tua is here or not, we have our backup plan, hopefully our future. So, I agree with you too, Brian. I don't think the window is completely closed on Miami in terms of competing and pushing for the playoffs or whatnot with Tua. But, again, it's all predicated on the health of Tua. If Tua goes, you watch the games, like, there's no offense.
Oh, there's a big difference.
There's no offense.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good. I mean, he's all right, but he needs a lot of help around him. He needs a really good supporting cast, and it's not the best. It's not the best supporting cast around Tua. But, that's the way it goes sometimes in the NFL, where you don't have a lot around a guy who's just good. Like, that's the thing, man, is put it this way, right? Like, with teams in the NFL, if Tua, like, the Dolphins are just out on him, how many teams in the NFL would be racing to try to sign Tua to the exact same deal that he's on right now? I don't know that teams are going to be racing for him. And on top of that, what team is going to be racing to pick up the tab and also give up draft compensation? It's like, oh, gosh, hell no. Like, but think about quarterbacks that are truly special. Would you be willing to pick up the tab with Mahomes and Josh Allen and Burrow and also give up some compensation? It's like, where do I sign? And then that's just not the reality of where Tua is, where, again, he's good. He's just not special reality.
Yeah, right. And, I mean, with the Dolphins, like, when that day comes and they are looking to move on from Tua, even if he's still young enough to go join a team and maybe help another team, nobody's going to touch that dude with a 10-foot pole because of all the concussions that have mounted up.
Absolutely.
Yep.
No doubt.
Yep.
So it's not just his play. I think if it's just production itself, it's still like we're giving up like a 1 and a 3 and paying the guy? Like, no thank you. Would you give up a 1 and a 3 for Josh Allen and pay him? Like, yeah, absolutely.
I'll give him 2 more.
Yeah. That's the difference right now between the two.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And seeing we're talking about the Miami Dolphins here, they did draft Quinn Ewers here in the 7th round, number 231 pick overall. Mike Tackett, he's out there. He says, let's talk about Quinn Ewers, man. Lots of potential to get paid more and develop his own craft more if he stayed more another year in college. But the dude fell in the 7th round, you know. He took a pay cut, too, on top of it. And that's the funny thing now, since this NIL thing, that this all comes to play. I mean, I would look at it as at least a player going into the draft again. I'm like, where am I looking at? Where am I expected to go? What can I potentially get paid? Because I'm making a sweet deal right here. I might just stay, in college another year, live my life here, do this, even, work on, not only my craft, but then
get that degree or whatever, too, to fall back on, too, if it falls out. But I'm getting paid, too. I mean, these guys are getting paid a ridiculous amount of money now. So what do you think about this whole deal here, Brian?
I just think it's wild how quickly things have changed, where if you think about Quinn Ewers, like, listen, we get it. It's hard to evaluate college quarterbacks and who's going to do what in the NFL. That's not the easiest thing to do with a lot of quarterbacks. But what blows my mind is we've had Quinn Ewers. He was thought to be at one time one of the top picks in the draft, certainly a first rounder. And he did not play to that standard last season. Carson Beck at Georgia. He was thought to be one of the upper echelon high draft picks. Shedeur Sanders, another one. To get into a little bit more reasons than just play on the field through the eyes of ownership and NFL teams, we get that with Shedeur. But the thing, Spencer Rattler, remember when he was thought to be maybe the first overall pick at one time, and he slid to, I think, the fifth round. So Rattler, Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, these guys that are thought to be top five, top 10 picks, first rounders for certain, sometimes they're in the fifth, the seventh round. Like, it's crazy how quickly in 1 year, guys that are thought to be top of the draft are free falling. And that's one of the things I take away from Quinn Ewers, because I get it. I'm just like, oh gosh, this, no, like, it's a flyer. It's a shoulder shrug. It's a, well, maybe we strike gold like Purdy, but most likely not. That's how quickly it's changed with Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, Quinn, very disappointing season. A lot of people kept pointing to the fact, well, he's dealing with an oblique injury and he's still playing with it. And I'm like, okay, but why is he playing? Why is he getting healthy and then go on back on the football field? Because he was worried about Arch Manning coming in and be like, well, now I can't get back on the field because Arch Manning's having such a good year. That's pretty much what I felt was his concern. It's like he wanted to get the reps, get out there, show everybody in the NFL, like, I can play and all that. But, man, bad year, inconsistent with accuracy, lackluster of off-platform throws, and it led to a lot to be desired from Quinn, and that's really why he fell. I would have hoped that his advisors or whoever he was talking to, his agent, what should have told him, like, dude, stay in for another year. You're going to get paid several million dollars to go play out with a different school, play one more year, then go into the draft. But, you know, whatever. He's there now. He's in Miami. Listen, I don't wish any of these dudes, you know, any harm or any ill will or anything like that. I hope they all succeed. But reality is that, it's an uphill battle, especially for guys that get picked as late as he did.
It is pretty remarkable. Like, think of Quinn Ewers starting his career like Brock Purdy. You know what I mean? It seems like almost unfathomable. And it just for a second, it's not to trash Quinn Ewers. It's to give credit to Brock Purdy where, look, man, I don't think a $55 million a year contract is the greatest move ever. Right? I think he's good. I don't think he's special. But to even be this good, like, think of the teams that are drafting quarterbacks in the seventh round. If they're anything even close to what Purdy has done at the beginning of his career, they're doing backflips. They're doing shirtless somersaults. Like, they're elated, you know? So, I have my thoughts on Purdy, but for a second, I got to give him his flowers. When you compare him to his peers, like, seventh rounders doing what he does is completely uncommon. And it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. He deserves some credit as far as that goes.
Right, and that's what the thing is. A lot of people kind of put those late rounder guys in like a pool. You got your guys that are drafted early on, like you said, you got your Josh Allen, your Patrick Mahomes. You see them there. You see your guys that are drafted later. They're a great story. They're leading their team somewhere, like your Brock Purdy's, things like that. Even Dak Prescott for the Cowboys, but they only get you so far. It's like they hit their ceiling or something like that. You know, like Brian said, they're good, but they're not special. And that's kind of like what you get when you get those guys when they're drafted that far. And that's kind of what you get. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're not going to get that upper echelon there.
No doubt. I'm just wondering, when are we going to get to a time in the NFL where teams realize this? They get so panicked where it's like, at least we have a viable option. I don't know why teams don't think like the Chiefs. They had a viable option in Alex Smith. He's not great, but he's good enough. You're going to win games. You're going to be in the playoffs. You know, he led the NFL in passer rating the year Mahomes was a rookie. You know, like, you could do worse than Alex Smith, but they're like, we want to do better. We want to be special. We don't just want to be good. And yet these teams, time and time again, they will pay a good quarterback elite money. And it's like, you're screwed that way too. You got to skimp so much with the roster, they're not good enough to compensate for it. And so I wish these teams would say, hey, although we're good and although it's scary to just change things here and try to find the next quarterback, we could be way worse. And that's a nightmare scenario potentially playing out. But we could be better. And we're screwed anyway if we just have a good quarterback that we're paying elite money. But time and time again, teams just don't think like that. And guess what happens? They don't move forward. What team paying an average quarterback elite money has just gone from, you know, middling to boom, Super Bowl? It doesn't happen. You stay middling, and yet they'll be content just staying in that lane. I don't get that at all.
And I'll say sometimes teams they settle and get comfortable with the quarterback that they have in place because they know they can win with them, but they also know that they have to make sure that they surround them with a lot of talent in order to win those games, you know. So I've seen with some teams, think of Green Bay, who always seem to draft a quarterback way ahead or at least a year before they actually need one, you know, and then hopefully he pans out. Like, they've been really fortunate with their history at that position. So you would think that being an NFL, a copycat league, that they would see Green Bay and be like, you know what? They always seem to find that next guy, and they don't just wait until they need it. They draft ahead. They groom him a year, two, maybe more, and then he gets a shot, and then they don't miss a beat.
Yeah, I know.
Brian, do you think Jared Goff's in that same situation here? Just because he's shown that he can win, he can get there, and Detroit had paid him now, and they've made the playoffs here, but still hasn't won yet, though. So you think Jared Goff, if he doesn't win a Super Bowl, is in that same type of conversation?
He could be. It's funny you brought this up. I was doing a fill-in show in Milwaukee, of all places, this morning, and Jared Goff, his name came up, and I'm like, did you see this guy's numbers last year where he threw for over 4,600 yards, 37 touchdown passes, 12 picks? You know, like, you'd sign up for that with any quarterback in the league, anybody. Josh Allen, Mahomes, you take those numbers all day. 72% completion rate. The problem is he wet himself against Washington. He was brutal in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's a legitimate question where you can win games. I wouldn't say he's special, but he's good enough to win games. I think good enough to win big games because he doesn't have to do everything himself with what Detroit has going on there. So I do think you can win big with Jared Goff. You were in a Super Bowl. He's with the Rams. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's capable. But he's not a guy. He's always going to be a guy until he wins it all that's going to be sold short. He's going to be a guy that you're like, shoulder shrug, I guess Jared Goff. Like, he's put up numbers. But I can understand why you wouldn't have this great feeling of big game, drive, got to have it, Jared Goff, lead us, buddy. Do what you do. Like, I can understand why you just don't feel he's that guy.
Absolutely. All right, we're talking to Brian Noe, Fox Sports Radio, Countdown. First of all, before we close and everything, I want to say, I saw you went to WrestleMania, huh? How was that? Did you have a good time there checking out WrestleMania?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fun time, man. It's a spectacle. It's awesome. Like, when CM Punk is walking out with Living Color, playing multiple personality, and it's just cool, man. Like, Seth Rollins, his entrance music, it's heavy. Like, the whole place is shaking. I'm like, this is awesome. Because, you know me, I love some here. So it was fun. It was a really good time. I'm glad we went.
Yeah, that's awesome. Again, there's nothing like it when you go there. I have never been to WrestleMania, but going to the live events too. I mean, how is that the one too where you know, Stone Cold in Albany did the whole beer truck and everything with DeCrescenti's all over. So yeah, that was a great old time. And it's great that it's like one of those big moments in actually out there, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then hearing the music too and the shaking, it kind of really builds it even bigger for you. And Living Color, like Cult of Personality, I mean, you're a rock guy. Isn't that like an anthem of our generation? Probably. We're probably around the same age. Oh, but yeah, that song just slams anywhere. Whenever you listen to it, everybody knows it. It's like, oh, this song is so good. Right? Just that riff.
It is.
You know? Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing song. The guitar riff, Vernon Reid, shout out to him. The guitar solo, just absolutely shredding. It's an awesome song. It's one of the best rock songs ever. That's not overstating it, I don't think, at all. It's a tremendous song, and to be there live when they're playing it in person, oh, it was so cool, man. It was just really, really awesome stuff. I'm glad we got a chance to check that out, because it was, no, and me, I don't plan anything. I'm like, oh, shoot, WrestleMania. Like, true wrestling fans would be like, oh, my gosh, this freaking guy here. I'm like, oh, WrestleMania, what's today, you know? And I'm like, you want to go? I'm like, well, tickets are freaking expensive. Holy hell, you know? But, like, when are you going to have a chance where we move around all the time, and I happen to be in Vegas. I've been here for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, something like that. It's in our backyard right now. How many times are you going to have, like, WrestleMania in your backyard? I think you got to jump at a chance like that.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel sometimes when concerts pop up out of nowhere, and I'm just like, wait, what band is going to be in town? Like, are you kidding me? I didn't hear about this. I got to look up tickets. You know, Steve Vinny's available. It happens all the time.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely, man. You start living your life, you know, whatever you got going on. You got kids, you got this commitment, you got that. And, yeah, all of a sudden, you don't live life like you're 15 anymore. Had a lot more time to be on top of stuff back then, you know?
Yeah. You're like, when's the show? Oh, wait, that's tonight. Damn it. My wife will understand, I think. So are you a wrestling fan at all or no? Like,
I haven't been up on it lately, I'll be fully honest with you, but I loved the NWO days. I loved the Attitude Era. There are a lot of things that I loved from previous, you know, the Stone Cold stuff was amazing. You know, when they had Sting in the rafters, that was always fun. Yeah, it's just Sting with his baseball bat in the rafters pointing at it. It's Sting! We gotta go! That was so fun, man. For anyone who's just like, oh, the NWO era, that was awesome stuff. It was so good back then. And I looked forward to it every week. They did an amazing job with, you know, Scott Hall and WCW. It was so good. I love
even
it.
Even like remember Generation X?
Yeah. Degeneration.
Oh yeah.
Degeneration X.
That
was dope.
Attitude Era and that with the NWO. And it's funny, it's because the only way to kind of describe it is say almost like if NFL had a really true competitor, you know what I mean? And was like dogging each other, invading each other's games or something like that. I mean, that's what it was like. What? Because you got two battle, you know, big teams here, factions. Yeah. Battling it out back and forth on each other. And meanwhile, we all know it was, you know, orchestrated through the whole thing and everything. But how amazing, though. And it was good times.
It was so good. We went to a show in Chicago one year, WCW. And we turned NWO on one of our friends. Like, we snuck off and got T-shirts, like, and put it underneath our shirt. And we turned NWO. And we were so stupid. It was funny. It was so long ago. We had one of those Kodak cameras, the throwaway cameras.
Yeah, the foldables.
Yeah, we were on the floor, and DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, walked through the crowd, and we got a picture of him, like, you know, pushing us away, you know, in character. Raven did the same thing. Remember Raven? Raven's flock. But it was back in the day where it's not on your phone, and you look like, oh, that picture turned out good, or if you have a certain phone, it could be a bad picture. You just move it to a good picture. It was a throwaway. It was a disposable camera. And you have to go to the store. Oh, man, did the picture turn out? Yeah. And you got to be like, so those days, man, it was fun stuff way back then. And I still like this era. But I'll be honest, at WrestleMania, I'm like, wow, don't know this guy. Don't know this guy. this girl? I'm like, pro wrestling fans would be pissed at me right now that I'm here and I'm not.
Oh, yeah, I totally get that, too. All right, I can't get out of this show, too, without asking you some music questions, too. I know you're good friends with Lamb of God and stuff, but you learn any new songs, anything like that? You going to shows coming up? Who are you excited to see coming up near you in Vegas? I mean, there's got to be some shows, you know, that you're excited to go to.
Yeah, there got to be some metal shows coming up. I'm due to see Lamb of God again sometime soon. Those are my guys. I love them. I'm always up for a newer acts, you know, if there's any newer bands that, but please hit me up. If you ever have any bands that you recommend or the heavier side of things, I'm the most picky with metal. It's weird. Yeah. I love metal the most. I'm pretty eclectic. I'm all over the place, but metal is my go-to. I love it the most. I'm the most picky with bands. I need to be more open-minded and just like, hey, I like this riff. Hey, I like this chorus, but I'm just like, I screwed it up. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why I'm like that, man. I need to be a little bit better about that.
Yeah. One of our favorites, we definitely like Motionless and White. Joe and I, we don't have a crew. We're big Motionless and White guys. And Wage War, too, I think is a really
good band,
too. I don't know if you heard those guys at all.
Very nice. No, I'll check them out.
Check them out, brother. Yeah.
Yeah,
like it. Them out. Yeah, absolutely.
Real good ones.
All right, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us.
There's so many more.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot more. I feel like, because, I don't know, Brian, like, remember when, like, everybody kept saying, like, metal's going to die, no one likes it, this, that, and the other thing. And then it's like nowadays, like, I feel like it's just gotten way bigger. Like, there's just a way bigger audience now.
Yeah, like, listen, man, it's underground. It's always going to be that. Never going to be mainstream. It doesn't appeal to the masses. We get it. But I've always compared it to hockey. You know, hockey is not mainstream. I don't know that it's ever going to be mainstream again. And but the amount of people who love metal and love hockey freaking adore it. You know what I'm saying? It's too much in your blood for it to just go away. I don't think that's ever going to happen for either.
Yeah, I agree too. That kind of like it. Hockey, same thing. It's like you love hockey. We like hockey too, and you're a dude. Like if you like hockey, like you love hockey. Same thing. You're my guy. You know. Here we go.
Right. There's no casual fans. Like, I caught a game last month. It's like, no, man. You've got tattoos on your forearms. And, you know what I mean? Like you're all in. You're not halfway at all.
Yeah, and you talk about how like it's underground. Well. You'll be more apt than not to see metal bands, like real big metal bands, go to smaller venues, and it's a much more intimate experience and everything. Like there's a place, you know, in downtown Albany that we go to for a lot of metal shows and stuff, Empire Live, and it's small, really small. Like, it's like the size of a house, and that's the space, and then you have the stage, and like you're right there. It's insane. So, I think it's a special
there's something
thing.
To that, right? Like, I remember going to Northern Lights, and it's super small, and DMX was there one time. The DMX was amazing live. But that's the thing, right? Like, it'll hit you sometimes, whether it's a big area, but what you guys are talking about, the small areas where you'll see a band or whatever, a guitarist, someone who's got real talent, and you're like, that's what I want to do. Like, that's an experience when you're like, that's what I want to be. Like, and it just hits you right between the eyes. Like, you'll have some of those experiences in those smaller areas. I don't know what it is. There's something about it. I always love Chicago, the Aragon Ballroom. There's just something about the way it looks, the ambiance. It looks like you're in Spain or something like that.
That's awesome.
Saw Pantera there, like Megadeth there. There's just something about the setting where you're like, this is so abnormal to a normal arena or wherever you typically go to see concerts. And we always call it the air is gone ballroom because there is no air, like legitimately.
Oh, I tried to
pass out seeing Megadeth, you know? It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Hell yeah, man. We love it. We love it every time you're on the show. Brian, tell everybody your socials, how they can find more of you out there. Let's see some plugs here. What you got?
Yeah, man, just hit me up on X, Twitter, whatever you call it, at the No Show is the best way to get me. That's when I check the most often. You know, Facebook, I'm there as well, but that's, you know, more of the old school thing. I need to get back on IG. I got hacked going into an NFL playoff game. And it was just so funny looking back. It was one of my guys, actually Duke Barbershop, shout out, my guy Duke in Albany. I was walking into, it was the Arizona Cardinals at the Rams. They were playing a playoff game a few years ago. It was the first round. I'm walking into SoFi and I get a text from Duke and he's like, hey, can you, it's so stupid looking back now. He's like, can you copy this link and send it back? I'm walking into the stadium. I'm like, yeah, sure, Duke, whatever. Like Duke would say. Next thing I know, I'm getting blown up. Hey, dude, I think you got hacked. Hey, I think you got hacked. I'm like, oh, no. I haven't had IG since then, since I got hacked. It had to have been 3 or more years ago, but I need to get back on IG as well.
Yeah, it's way different now, man. It'll be all crazy, but, yeah, definitely. Oh, man. Yeah, Brian, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Fox Sports Radio, weekends, the countdown. He's there with Jeff Sports there, too. Tell Jeff to stop being such a diva, man, and hit us up, man. Come on. He's holding out. He's big players.
Yeah, he just acts like he's, you know, he's established or something, you know? He acts like he's too good for a Giants fan, you know, when he played there.
What's up with this? What the hell, man? All right, thanks a lot, Brian. We're hoping to talk to you soon, you know, in the upcoming training camps and then also even the upcoming season, man. Good luck to you.
Absolutely. Same to you guys, man. Thanks for having me on anytime. Love talking ball with you.
All right, thanks, brother. I'll see you later. But there he is, Brian Noe, man.
The myth, the legend.
Dude, and what's great about Brian Noe and a guy like him, man, after an interview or you're just hanging out, like, this is what I mean. This wasn't even like an interview. It's just like a go. And my face hurts from laughing.
It was a laugh session, like real.
So, I mean, we love talking to him. It's good therapy. We have laughs. Yeah. Good dude. He's one of our dudes. So, we got to see him again sometime. We got plan some road trips. Brian Noe's on one of them. Now we got to go to Vegas again. No joke.
You know, the road trips are getting way more expensive.
You
got to
do it. Yeah. William Del Pinar, you're out there. William, there you go. There's my camera. William. It's my boss. The Grumblings boss. Let's go. World tour. We got to see our know-it-alls. We got to see our guys out there. Let's do it. We'll do live shows from remote wherever we're going. Let's do it. Get the bus going. All right. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody, listen to Joe so he can tell you where you can find more shows like this here at Grumblings Media. Hit it, Joe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's real simple. Like, help us grow, continue to grow, I should say, because we are in the thousands. What are we, 10,000? We're approaching 10K, if not already have met it. I didn't check it before we hopped on. But, man, we are just soaring up the ladder here for YouTube. And so we want you guys to be a part of this ride. Come on over, hit that subscribe button over at Grumblings Media on YouTube. Hit the thumbs up while you're there. Share it to all your family and friends. All that good stuff. Listen, we really, really are excited about the future of this media company and where we can take this thing. Want you guys to be part of the ride. Become OG Blitz Nation. You know, get involved.
Get involved.
Get interactive too. Drop into the comments down below. Listen, when we go on here, we're live. We want you guys to drop in the comment section, be part of the show, ask questions, give your opinions. If you want us to talk about something, say it. We'll do it. But it's all good. Become part of the family.
All right. See you guys in the next one.